You are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. A lot of attention's been given to federal tax policies lately, and for good reason. Both the Senate and House tax bills are full of dangerous provisions that will help high-income earners and big corporations at the expense of ordinary Americans. But Arkansas could also be seeing big changes to its tax system. Currently, a tax task force is reviewing Arkansas's tax policies and will be releasing recommendations for the state's General Assembly to adopt. What is the tax task force? What recommendations could they make? What does this mean for Arkansas? Today we are joined by three guests: Reverend Steve Copley, Chair of Faith Voices Arkansas; Neil Seeley, Director of Arkansas Community Organizations; and Ellie Wheeler, Senior Policy Analyst at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. Thank y'all for being with us today. Can we just start really quick with introductions and talk a bit about your work?
Okay, me. All right. Hi, this is Neil, and I work with Arkansas Community Organizations and the Arkansas Community Institute, and we are a membership organization of low to moderate income households here in Arkansas, concentrated primarily in Pulaski, Central Arkansas, and Jefferson, and some other places in Southeast Arkansas. And we work on a variety of issues. Lately, we've been focused on some very taxing issues that nice include saving and defending our health care and the current so-called tax reform legislation now in D.C. And we also provide services, financial coaching, and free tax filing. And so we really know a lot of people who get the earned income tax credit, think it's important credit, and we'll get into that more.
I'm Reverend Steve Copley. I'm a United Methodist clergy, and I chair Faith Voices Arkansas. Faith Voices Arkansas is a statewide organization that primarily works with the state legislature and the federal Congress on a whole variety of issues of concern to the faith community, from the environment to international issues to economic justice. And it's within the economic justice that we would address tax policy, because we know that tax policy has an impact on low-income people's lives. And so we've been engaged in the federal debate currently on the change in tax policy, and very interested in what's happening in Arkansas as well.
Thanks, Steve. My name's Ellie Wheeler, and I work for Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, and I focus on tax and budget issues. So that means at the state level or at the federal level. And at Advocates, we try and make sure to consider all policies from the perspective of what's best for kids. And so that means that a lot of times I do get to work with great people like our other two guests here today on a variety of issues, because, you know, when you change something in the tax code, it has ripple effects throughout the rest of the economy, and that includes healthcare and a lot of other important issues. So it's great to be here, and I'll give it back to Rebecca.
Okay, well, I guess we'll just start from the beginning. I think a lot of people aren't aware that this tax force even exists. So could you talk about what the Arkansas Tax Task Force is and why it was formed?
Okay. Besides kind of being a tongue twister, it is it was formed as part of the Tax Reform and Relief Act of 2017, and it is a group of representatives and senators in Arkansas who are meeting regularly to prepare. The goal of the task force is to come up with some final recommendations, which are due in September of 2018.
Okay, well, who are the task force members? Where are they from, especially for our listenership or whatever it's called in Central Arkansas? Who are the local people?
I know that we do have Warwick Sabin, Bob Johnson, and Senator Joyce Elliott are the local ones. I believe those are all of the tax task force members from Central Arkansas. but they are from all over the state.
What has happened in the tax force so far? I guess they've had, what, 5 or 6 meetings so far?
I can't remember. That sounds about right. We just had 2 sort of marathon meetings over the past couple days, and relatively recently they hired a consultant to come in and help them with putting together some tax policy scenarios and advising them in certain ways. And then today and yesterday they had groups from other states come in and talk about their experiences with tax policy changes. And so from those other states, it was North Carolina, Indiana, Oklahoma, and Kansas. So they came in and talked today.
How did the Kansas people react? Yeah. Were you able to be there?
It was interesting. You know, Kansas sort of famously had some pretty major tax failures. They passed some very abrupt, large tax cuts with the expectation that that would really boost their economy. And that didn't happen. What ended up happening is their budget fell apart and they had to close schools early. They had a really big budget disaster that they're still coming back from. So it was sort of interesting, to say the least, to hear those experiences from the Kansas point of view. I'm concerned about what some of the conclusions people might draw from what was presented today, because it seemed that some of the sentiment was, well, maybe we can do that, but we'll just do it. We'll tweak the Kansas method instead of learning from those mistakes in a different way. It is concerning, and there are some similar things like Kansas happening across other states across the nation, and that would be disastrous for Arkansas. The idea that we should slow down and not be so abrupt as Kansas was is something that has its merits. But of course, if you look at the federal, that's certainly not what's happening at the federal level, and that is also really concerning for a whole different set of reasons.
And the federal level argument was similar to Kansas.
That's right.
We cut taxes. Exactly. Yeah. Economic growth will be stimulated, and we won't have any issues with deficits.
Right.
Right.
If you have any questions, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. And for those of listeners who aren't familiar with the situation in Kansas, could you talk a bit more about it, especially since that was brought up today in the task force?
Governor Brownback in Kansas passed some pretty sweeping tax cut legislation. I'm not familiar with all of the nuances of how it worked, but basically it was a boost for upper income earners in the state and certain corporations. And so the idea, again, was that this sort of tax cut, and it does, Steve is right, it does mirror the same ideas that are coming up again and again at the federal level, that this type of tax cut will boost the economy, make everything more competitive, there will be more jobs. But again, that's not what ended up happening. It ended up being way more expensive than they thought it would be. It didn't pay for itself, which is another thing that is coming up at the federal level, this idea that tax cuts will pay for themselves. That did not pan out in Kansas. And they had some really terrible budget issues in it. And they ended up having to come back recently and move a bunch of those taxes back up towards where they were to begin with, which is pretty surprising that a mostly Republican group would vote to rescind those tax cuts. So that's what ended up happening, and they're still not out of the hole in Kansas, and that's a huge concern for what might end up happening in Arkansas. We certainly wouldn't want to see the effects on the education system occur here in our state as well.
Has there ever been an example in recent history where this idea of big tax cuts for high-income earners and corporations, has that ever helped ordinary Americans and led to strong economic growth? Or
The majority of years of economic research says no, that for the most part, if if you want to really grow the economy, you have to invest in things that improve people's quality of life. That's educational mm-hmm. opportunities, long-term investments in infrastructure. Making your state, your country, a great place to live is what will draw people. There's this idea that lowering taxes will cause businesses to move across state lines, will cause people to move across state lines. But really, that's just not the case. There's a lot of research to support the idea that people stay put and businesses stay put. And what really helps the economy grow is to make smart investments in education and things like that.
Yeah,
and
go ahead, Neil. I come from North Carolina, actually, originally. And so one of the things that North Carolina did way back when was invest in education, particularly higher education. So we've seen, my hometown was just a tobacco town, textile, but there was a lot of investment in UNC and universities and in schools, and so that's a high growing area now. The economy fell apart in other parts of the state, but unfortunately what the new legislature in North Carolina has done is sort of moving North Carolina in the Kansas model, mm-hmm. where things will collapse.
Yeah, I have some numbers to just throw in with that, because three of the four groups who presented today are on this list of states who have smaller per pupil funding levels now than they did in 2008. So North Carolina is almost 8% less spending per student now than in 2008. Oklahoma is the worst, over 28% less spending per student now since 2008. And finally, Kansas, around 10% less per student. So these are the states that have made those major tax cuts, and the results are they don't have the ability to make those smart investments that do have the big payoffs.
I guess what bothers me, and I'm not an economist, but I was a history major, and this seems to go back to the early 80s with the whole Lafler piece that this is a little opinionated, but you know, the first George Bush attacked Ronald Reagan and said it was voodoo economics, but yet here we are almost 40 years later, and we're still seemingly to kind of adopt that model, even when it's wrecking states. And so I just find that interesting and a bit disconcerting.
Yeah, I agree. I would just say I agree to that.
Well, going back to the task force, so they're making recommendations on how to change and how much to change Arkansas's tax system. What's the actual process for making those recommendations? I guess they've hired a group of consultants to help guide that process. How is this actually going to work?
So they have regular meetings. It's been about once a month. The next one, and they're open to the public, really encourage people to check it out if they're interested and they have the time. The next meeting is going to be January 8th. They have a preliminary recommendation due this month. And then the final one again is due in September of 2018. So they're working with their consultants. I'm not sure exactly what their process is along those lines, but they do hold these public meetings, and they've had input from a bunch of different groups, which is great to hear from people who are involved in the education side of the funding process, and so that's nice to hear. So that's the timeline. The next meeting again is going to be January 8th at the Capitol, and they are open to the public.
And who are the consultants that they have hired?
It's a group called PFM. They've done other. I hadn't ever known about them until they were hired to work here in Arkansas. But I do know that they have done similar work in states like Oklahoma.
And again, if you have any questions, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088. So now that the tax force is, you know, about to make their preliminary recommendations and move into, I guess, what would be more intensive process over the next few months through the spring and summer, what kind of recommendations could they potentially make?
Well, we've At the tax task force meetings, they've discussed all manner of taxes in Arkansas, and there are a lot. They have the capacity to make any sort of recommendations, from property tax to income tax to sales tax. And, you know, there are some constitutional limitations there, but, you know, the sky's the limit on what they would want to do. As far as what I think they might be aiming towards is, you hear a lot of talk about kind of similar to what we've been hearing from other states, wanting to make our tax rates so-called competitive with other states, which lowering the top tax rate, which would affect primarily upper-income earners in Arkansas. So that could be concerning for our budget, because that kind of tax change isn't free, and we already have significant budget issues that do affect families in our state. So that's a concern. But on the bright side, there are some great options that they could recommend. We'd love to see the task force come out with an EITC, an earned income tax credit recommendation, and that would really do a lot to change the tune of how the Arkansas tax structure works. Right now, we're asking low-income people to pay twice the rate in state and local taxes as upper-income people. So if you make in the bottom 20% in Arkansas, you pay about 12% in state and local taxes. If you're in the top 1%, you pay about half of that, about 6% in state and local taxes. So an earned income tax credit is designed to be a really targeted way, an inexpensive way, to reverse some of that inequality that we have in our tax system. And Steve can talk a little bit more about why that's important, or Neil could maybe have an input on that too.
Okay. Well, we run a free tax site in Little Rock and Pine Bluff, and so we talk to the people who come in and survey them. So a few years back, we did a survey, and there are a lot of myths about the earned income tax credit, that it's free giveaway, people are getting tens of thousands of dollars of our hard-earned tax, and that's just not the case. And our average EITC amounts usually around $1,800 to $2,000. Mm-hmm. And so we asked families what they spent it on, and it was overwhelmingly for basic necessities like utilities, clothes for their children, paying. Some people were going to school so they could pay fees for the semester they were in. Mm-hmm. So all of this was spent in the local economy. And so we know that there's all what economists call a multiplier effect. So your every dollar is usually, if you put it in the local economy, it's worth far more. And since we have a high sales tax rate, you're also getting tax revenue from that money. So it's really overwhelmingly what people tell us. It's things that we need in the household. One woman had her car stolen, so she was able to get some funds to put down on a car. Mm-hmm. So it's things that are very, very basic. And sort of one of our missions is to sort of move some of that money into investments that increase people's wealth.
Yeah, that's great, because the research really bears out what you've heard from the people that you work with who are receiving the EITC. What we know is that kids who grew up in families that have access to earned income tax credits do better. Their parents are more able to stay in their jobs and move up in their career. And that's a great example with the woman in her car. I would imagine it would be pretty difficult to get to her job if she didn't have right. transportation. And so really simple things like that, the EITC helps connect, fill in the gaps for people along the way, allows families to move permanently out of poverty. And kids, again, who grew up in those families have who have access to EITC as opposed to families who don't, they have across-the-board better outcomes in education, health, future earnings even. It's really a lifelong benefit for kids and families to have that. And I would also just want to add that if Neil's talking about the federal EITC, and most states now do have their own state-level EITC, which just sort of piggybacks on that. It's just an extra whatever percentage of what you're getting from the federal EITC, we would add a certain percentage to the state. So Arkansas doesn't have a state EITC yet, but most other states do. And so we're hoping to get some legislation in our state to help build on that program.
What have been some of the arguments to oppose EITC in the state? I know we've tried a number of times to pass it.
You know, I think that Neil's right. It's the sentiment that it's a handout, but really it's in the name. It's an earned income tax credit.
Right.
People who have, you can't get it if you don't work. You're working, even with a state earned income tax credit. Lower income people would still be paying a higher share of their income to state and local taxes than the top 1%. Remember when I said it was 12%
right.
for low income and 6% for upper income? The EITC would help certainly with that, but it's in no way a handout for people who aren't putting money into the system. They definitely are. I think the misconception is that, you know, income tax isn't the only kind of tax that's out there. You pay property tax, sales tax. In fact, sales tax, Arkansas is overly reliant on sales tax compared to many other states. And a sales tax is one of those taxes that's much harder on low-income families. So our reliance on the sales tax contributes to the fact that low-income families are putting more into of their a more percentage of their paycheck into the tax system in Arkansas.
And that's called a regressive tax, right?
Yes, if you want to be, I just made that so that I wouldn't have to use the word regressive, that's regressive.
Yeah.
And I had so we often work on city issues and local issues, and has the task force addressed, there's really not many options for cities to raise revenue except the sales tax, a hamburger tax, you have some millage or property tax, mm-hmm. which is better because many people rent and they don't have to pay that, but it is also a standard flat rate. Mm-hmm. So have they talked about other options such as local income taxes or?
It's come up, but I don't think that's the focus because the tax task force is primarily aimed at state level policy change. But that's a good point. You know, some states, localities in other states even have their own local level income tax.
Yeah.
So
we just don't have home, so there has to be permissive mm-hmm. legislation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How does the current tax system actually work for the average Arkansan? I mean, we're having this tax task force, and so it's a good time to reflect on how it's working well and not well for everyday Arkansans, low-income kids and families. How does the current system function for those people?
Oh, that's a big question. Well, I think, like I said, you know, we do have a little bit more of a reliance on things like the sales tax than a lot of other places. And, you know, we do have a regressive overall tax system. And that's because the way we structure our income tax is that it's the income tax isn't progressive enough to outweigh the regressive nature of the sales tax. So now I'm using my wonky words again.
Basically, the burden is put on lower income people.
Yeah. So again, that's where you're seeing the bottom earners in our state paying 12%, where the top earners are paying 1%. And another part of that is that just in general, the way we tax wealth and money is structured to benefit people who are already well off. So, for example, capital gains, which is money that you earn from stocks, from other kind of passive, not wage earnings, that type of income is taxed much less heavily. And in fact, I think it was in 2015, we in Arkansas passed a law that said if you make more than $10 million in capital gains, you don't have to pay any taxes on any of the earnings above that $10 million. So that's a pretty extreme example, but there are ways that our tax system is structured to say, if you already have a lot of money, if a lot of your income is coming from the fact that you're already wealthy, we're not going to tax that type of income as much. So in general, yes, it is much harder if you work for that dollar. If you go to your job and you work for that dollar, it will be taxed probably higher than if you make money from a kind of capital gains type of income.
And Neil, how do you see the current tax system playing out for the people that you work with in your tax filing sites?
Well, we often see, and I can't give you any numbers, but there are a number of people who get refunds from the federal government and some EITC who end up paying state taxes.
With their federal refund, they have to end up putting that straight back into
paying
state
some
taxes.
Of the state taxes. So those state EITC would give those people some relief on that. So it's definitely it's, and a lot of people complain, why am I not getting a refund from the state? Mm-hmm. It's, we explain, it's because it's kind of flat, and that it, the burden is not progressively distributed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, the task force is taking about a year to make their recommendations, but we have about a half an hour now, so why don't we create our dream tax system for Arkansas? What, in an ideal world, would the state's tax system look like?
Well, certainly, as was mentioned, less reliance on sales tax. That's where the folks that are paid the least are affected the most, because
that's right.
Anything that you purchase, there's sales tax. And so some way to begin to rely less on sales tax for so much. And in addition to that, looking, and I know the task force has had some discussion about this, all the exemptions out there for certain businesses,
right.
Which, well, we're exempt from certain types of taxation because we do X and Y, and usually that's related to economics and the type of business they're in. But to, I can't remember the exact figure, but one representative on the task force said if we could just figure balance those out, it would be worth a tremendous amount to there'd be a tremendous amount of money right there. So figure out how to equalize sales tax usage. Look at a lot of the exemptions in the tax system and see if those couldn't be balanced out or neutralized a little bit would be where I would want to start.
And it, again, if you have a suggestion for the task force and what a dream tax system would look like for Arkansas, you can give us a call at 501-433-0088.
Yeah, just building a little bit off of what Steve said, I agree. We certainly do have a lot of exemptions. Some of them it would be really tough to get rid of. Some of them do make sense, but there are a lot, and it is important to go back and back through them and see, hey, is this one just because we snuck it through because a lobbyist really wanted it, or or is this really helping Arkansas's economy, and is this really a smart way to be spending our money? Because a dollar out through an exemption that isn't really necessary is $1 less than we could spend on some other programs that would be making Arkansas a better place.
Or it made sense 40 years ago.
Exactly.
But it doesn't
right.
now, but nobody's yep. taken the time to look at it or deal with it.
That's exactly right. And I think that's such a good point, too, because the nature of our economy has changed so much. The nature of how we live our lives has changed so much. And the tax code sometimes doesn't keep up with that type of change. And a great example is the way we tax gasoline. It's a wonderful thing that cars are getting more fuel efficient. But what that means is that if you can drive twice as far on a gallon of gas, then you can do twice as much damage to the roads on that same gallon. And if you're paying a set amount of money per gallon of gas to contribute to the maintenance of those roads, well, then we have a problem funding highways. And that's another thing that's happening in Arkansas right now. And so modernizing things like the gas tax will help make our budgeting system make more sense, and so we won't have to be scrambling all the time to fill in gaps. And same thing with how we tax services. You know, we as a society, we spend a lot more on services now than we used to. We used to buy things that you could touch, right. And now we spend money on lawn services and who knows what else, things that are not permanent, tangible things. And a lot of times those types of services aren't included in the sales tax. So as our economy shifts, we're seeing the tax revenue that we're collecting through sales tax erode because certain sectors of the economy that aren't taxed are growing at different rates. And also, you know, just throw in, we buy a lot more online now than we used to.
Yes,
do you want to say something about that?
You go ahead. That's
okay.
Where I was going.
So we buy a lot more online than we used to. And you know, there's problems with collecting that because it used to be that, you know, if you bought something, it was probably going to be from the state that you were in. But now you can buy something online and it's not necessarily from a state, from Arkansas. And so it's hard to get those out-of-state sellers to contribute to the Arkansas sales tax because they don't necessarily have a nexus in the state. And it might take federal change to the tax code to allow states to force out-of-state sellers to charge sales tax to customers in Arkansas. Do you want to add to that, Steve?
No, that's just where I was going to go, is that that's talk about changing in our society and culture. That is just a huge thing. So many folks buy online, and most of those folks, whether, you know, those companies are out of state, and right now it's very difficult to reach and get the revenue that used to be on Main Street of every small town. It's not, and that's a lot of money that's disappeared.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Amazon did actually recently agree to start collecting sales tax in Arkansas, but before that happened, you know, I think a lot of people would be surprised to know that you're actually supposed to keep track of those purchases and file an extra and pay those taxes at the end of the year. But of course, almost no one does that. So those are taxes you're actually supposed to be collected, but are being missed because it's hard, so difficult to enforce.
Interesting.
Yeah, probably most people don't know that they're supposed to be carefully tracking all online purchases and calculating their own sales tax and submitting a complicated form to the state revenue office or whatever that office is called.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to talk about what's on a lot of people's minds right now, the federal tax debate.
Seems so grossly unprepared.
Yeah.
I know. It just.
Okay, we are back. Again, if you have any questions about the state tax task force or about to get into the federal tax debate, you can give us a call at 501 833-0088. And so obviously a lot's been happening at the federal level with tax policy recently. The Senate passed their bill last Friday at 2 a.m. with a bunch of handwritten scribbles. And now it's potentially going to move in. The House and the Senate have to decide what their joint bill will look like. What's going on right now with that, and what actually are in those bills?
Do you want to? Okay. Yeah, so there are two bills, and they're in the process of reconciliation to mesh them together right now. You know, it gets pretty complicated, but the bottom line things between those two bills is they're both going to be pretty harmful for low and middle income Americans. And this is going to have, it's similar to what we were discussing earlier at the state level, majorly cutting taxes, which would contribute to, some estimates are, $1.5 trillion to the deficit. That's going to tie our hands for our ability to invest in things that we really care about, like Medicare, Medicaid, nutrition support programs like SNAP, the federal earned income tax credit program, Social Security, Pell Grants, TANF, things like that will really be in danger because of this tax cut. And like I said, it's just not going to be this benefit to low and middle income families like it was sometimes portrayed to be. If you get any, there will be some people in the low and middle income range who get some benefits, but most of those benefits will be eventually rolled back. The benefits that will stay are going to be the ones for wealthy and corporate tax cuts.
Yeah, that's right. At the end of 10 years, the corporate cut remains.
Right.
And all the personal tax cuts, it's uncertain. They may or may not be there. You're not going to get much.
Yeah.
But if you're just middle class person, low income person.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, in all the health care proposals to repeal $1.5 trillion in cuts, at least in one of the last ones, that was in that bill. That will be done and try to be done. They will try to do that in 2018, and that's $1 trillion from Medicaid and $500 billion from Medicare. And if the Senate version passed, there would be an automatic $28 billion cut in 2018 to Medicare.
And what's ominous, and it builds on that, is the next big discussion that they're supposed to have is on welfare. And so here you make major tax cuts, and then you go immediately to what we've talked about, a lot of the social safety nets. That's where they're going next. So you can cut taxes and cut what they consider expenditures, and that's pretty ominous. It hasn't had a lot of traction. But maybe one of you can help remind me, because I know that Senator Corker was trying to get into the Senate plan a trigger that if this didn't raise the revenue that was anticipated, the tax cuts would automatically revert. Did that happen?
I don't recall.
No, I don't think it did.
It didn't.
And I definitely know it wasn't in the House plan, but I didn't know. I couldn't remember if he'd gotten it into the Senate plan, which is kind of concerning.
Yeah, and he did not vote for the Senate.
Yeah.
And Ellie, going back to your point, so basically what you're saying is going to happen is that these tax cuts, which will inevitably lead to some budget problems for the federal government, is going to be justified to cut essential services like Medicaid and SNAP.
Yeah. I mean, they're inextricably linked. And for, you know, I think that it looks better to cut taxes and then wait and have people forget about it and then a little bit later say, oh gosh, we don't have any money left for this program. There's nothing we can do. Well, you could have done something but you know it's something you know while you're doing it. When you cut taxes to this degree, you're not going to be able to make the investments that you need to make in other social programs. So yeah, this is setting up kind of a domino effect that we will see in future legislation.
What other provisions does the especially I suppose since it just passed the Senate's bill, what other, I've heard that there's lots of sort of rotten eggs in the bill. What other sort of things have been included in that?
Well, I'll talk about one that's not tax related, but that Faith Voices is concerned about, and it's related to church-state issues. The House has put into the bill to eliminate the Johnson Amendment, which allows any nonprofit with a 501c3 status to begin to openly advocate on behalf of candidates, churches included. Now, the Senate ended up not putting it in their proposal. They were really looking at it at one time, so I don't know where that'll come in conference, but that's really disconcerting to me as the idea that as a pastor that our churches can openly advocate for candidates and endorse candidates, raise money for candidates. I'm not sure that's really where we want to go in the country, but that's also a pledge that the current administration vowed that they would get in. So that's one of those rotten eggs. It has nothing to do with tax, except it has to do with the tax code. So that's a bit disconcerting to me.
And is that just churches that will now be allowed to start advocating for candidates?
Any nonprofit, any 501c3 organization can do that if the Senate accepts that, then certainly any C3 can say, all right, I want to, you vote for X, and can raise money and bring the money in through their coffers for a candidate. So it's not just churches, it's all nonprofits.
And still
can receive their tax status. Mm-hmm. They don't lose that.
And so I could go to church on Sunday and give a donation in the basket, and that could end up going towards a political candidate?
That's correct, yeah. Yes.
Wow. Another one that's a big one is the Senate plan includes cutting the ACA mandate penalty. What that does is it helps to encourage people, especially the people we really want to be in our healthcare pool paying for health insurance, which are young, healthy people. It encourages them to buy health insurance. And if that goes away, if the penalty goes away, it could lead to an estimated 13 million more uninsured Americans and increases to premiums. It's a really key component of our healthcare system, and it would be a really dangerous thing to get rid of.
And for me, the corporate, to me, most rotten things is the corporate tax cuts, because it's going to benefit the biggest corporations, especially those who have been pioneers in offshoring. Mm-hmm. And then the setup of what's called a territorial tax system that you'll be able to continue to have offshore businesses or addresses, shall we say, and pay at those lower rates. And to entice you back, we'll give you lower rates. And so it's not going to stop offshoring, which is, I thought, was a part of the current president's platform, was to bring jobs back to America. But it's hard to see how that does that.
And how will these big tax cuts potentially affect the deficit?
The estimate, the most recent estimate that I heard is that it will increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. You know, that the idea that these tax cuts will pay for themselves through economic growth is really unfounded. And like we discussed earlier, sometimes people like to think of states being sort of experimentation grounds for things that we could maybe do on a broader level. But we have seen states experiment with this type of major tax cut policy, and it's ended disastrously. And those tax cuts haven't paid for themselves. And earlier we talked about Kansas, and there are other states in that pool too. So this is really concerning. The amount of deficit will really hinder our ability to make good investments in the future.
It's kind of concerning because they say the economic growth comes because if I'm a company, I'm the owner of the corporation, mm-hmm. then I'll take the extra money that I have and I'll plow it back into jobs and reinvestment, when in reality there have been a couple of studies, right. And you may be more familiar than I am with them, but I've heard snippets about them that in reality what's happening is the company makes sure they plow it back into their corporate earnings so their dividends are larger.
That's right. Yep.
And when you have to cut programs like health care or education, it costs jobs as well. And decent paying jobs that benefit a lot of low-income, low-wage workers. We have amongst our membership a lot of home health care workers. Mm-hmm. And the senior will lose the care, but that person will also lose a job. And so how can that help the economy, mm-hmm. if we're killing jobs that way?
Yeah.
So what will this end up looking like for the average Arkansan? They'll get a tax cut possibly for a few years, but what will that actually end up looking like? What they'll have benefits cut, it sounds like, to critical services.
Right. So one estimate of how this would impact Arkansans is that the poorest 20% of Arkansans would receive an average tax change of a cut of about $70. That would completely go away by 2027, and instead they would end up paying $110 more. So that initial kind of small little peanuts would actually go away and reverse itself. So that would be not a good thing for a lot of people in our state. Additionally, by 2027, middle-income taxpayers in Arkansas would be paying almost as much more, about $90 more in taxes because of this bill. So it's really not in the long-term interests of most Arkansans. We talked about rotten eggs, and I have some things are like only half rotten, but there's a change to the child tax credit. And I think what's kind of rotten about that is that it sounds better than it really is. It is a token benefit to low-income families, just about $75 more a year. Yeah. But really, who it's really aimed at is upper-income families who'd get $2,000 a year child tax credit. If they're making around $100,000 to $500,000 a year. And even this would also be rolled back by 2025. So again, it's even these sort of positive things are, the theme is mostly benefiting the wealthy and primarily going to be rolled back or reversed in 10 years.
And then there's smaller, these deductions that people can take. Well, it's, and depending on which version gets in, but the medical expense deduction in one of them was eliminated for people who are very sick. That is very beneficial. Eliminating that will increase your taxes, the state and local tax deduction. And then for students, the student loan interest deduction they will not benefit from this program. And then this, if you're a school teacher, if you buy supplies in one of the bills, that deduction that every teacher that we've helped takes, because they all have to buy supplies for schools, that in one of those versions, that would be eliminated.
Mm-hmm. And what's the timeline for these tax proposals? When do we think there'll be a final vote and this potentially become law?
Well, the last I heard is that they had a goal of sending it to the president's desk before Christmas. But I hadn't heard anything newer than that. Have y'all?
I think they've got a... There's a whole government shutdown discussion, so that may take precedent right now over the tax thing. So,
would these take effect this upcoming tax season, or would it be 2018, or do we even know?
I think 2018.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2018.
Okay. Again, if you have any questions, I know everyone is fascinated by taxes, but I think we all know how important it is. You can give us a call at 501-433-0088. And going back to the tax task force, and what is happening at the state since it is getting less attention, how can people reach out to the task force and let them know their opinion of the tax system in the state and what would be good recommendations and what would be bad recommendations?
That's a great question. So you can search for the Arkansas General Assembly, and there's a website. And on that website, you can find the roster for the Tax Reform and Relief Task Force. If one of your representatives or senators is on that list, I highly recommend giving them a call, emailing them. Oh, we've got a question.
We
all right.
Do? Okay. Okay, you're on the air.
Hey, I've got one question. It's a fascinating discussion. But is anybody doing anything to take big money out of elections? And I'll listen offline.
Thank you for your call. Anyone know about big money in elections?
Except it's needed. But there have been various proposals. We have a small deduction that people can take for contributing. Ordinary people, it's a $50 deduction on your state taxes, $100 if you're a married couple. But that has been a huge debate in the country for decades, and we've seen sort of the barn door left open for big money with the Supreme Court ruling of a few years back, and we need to push.
Yeah, and that relates to what you were saying, Steve, about the Johnson Amendment, right? Do you know what the... do you want to just expand on that a little bit or talk about what's the pushback, or have you heard of people kind of coming together to push back on that Johnson Amendment change?
Oh, yeah. We've certainly pushed and pushed and pushed and encouraged folks to call senators and representatives. And truthfully, it'll be probably, as far as faith community, be a small subsection of folks that will be engaged, but in terms of big money, that's just opens the door for another avenue for big money to flow, right. And in some ways, depending on how they structure themselves, it opens the door for C3s, but it allows outside groups to pump in a lot of extra money. So in some ways, yeah, you're right. It's just pushing up against, instead of reducing access to capital to run campaigns, it's just putting more and more money into the system, just in a different avenue. So it's like a body of water. As the stream rolls, it's just found another avenue to go down. It hadn't slowed anything down. So there have been a number of opportunities, but Citizens United really opened the floodgate 7-8 years ago to lots and lots of money. Until the Supreme Court overturns that, it's going to be difficult to get money out of the politics, big money.
So to our caller, it sounds like there aren't efforts to decrease big money in politics, but to increase it. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Going back to how people can reach out to the task force and tell them their concerns and what they think would be best for the tax system, how could they go about doing that?
Yeah, like I said, you can check out the roster of the Tax Reform and Relief Task Force on the Arkansas General Assembly website. But if you aren't represented by Warwick Sabin, Bob Johnson, Jonathan Disming, or Senator Joyce Elliott, you can still call your representatives and ask them to support the tax policy that you care about. They certainly all know each other, and even if your representatives aren't on the task force, it's still important to let them know that you're paying attention and that you care about this, because these are just, you know, these recommendations matter. They're certainly extremely important, but it comes down to what laws get passed at the end of the day, and a lot of that's going to be happening in 2019. So if they already know that it's a no-go to pass bad tax policy, then that's a really important thing.
And I'm putting my outreach director hat on for a second to follow up with what Ellie said. Right now, the task force is really mostly just hearing from lobbyists. They're not hearing from everyday Arkansans, again, because a lot of them don't even know the task force exists. So your phone call talking about your concerns can make a big difference.
That's right. And yeah, that's absolutely right, Rebecca. During session, sometimes it is a little bit harder to reach people because it's crazy up there. There's thousands of bills and there's a lot going on. Right now, out of session, it's a lot easier to get in contact with your representatives. They have a lot more time on their hands. Like Rebecca said, not a lot of people are reaching out about this tax policy thing. Sometimes it can seem more compelling to advocate for education or healthcare, but the tax policy really underlies all of those issues. And I like to say that whatever your primary issue is, your secondary issue should be tax and budget, because if you wait until the tax and budget decisions have been made, you will not have a lot of options for how to spend money on other programs that you care about. So I really do encourage you write a letter, make a phone call. It does matter, and it will make an influence on decisions that are made at the Capitol.
Okay, we just have about 3 minutes left. Neil, could you quickly talk about VITA and where people can find VITA sites? It's about to be tax filing season, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners can benefit from VITA.
Yeah, so VITA stands for Volunteer Income Tax Assistance. These are sites where you can get help preparing your taxes for free. So there's no, you don't have to pay $260 in tax, the average tax prep fee to get your taxes done. And we have several locations in Central Arkansas. Two groups that are doing it are Arkansas Community Institute here at 21st and Main Street, and the Central Arkansas Development Corporation, CADC. If you want to find a location, go to irs.gov. Click on I don't know where you, we'll get
irs.gov/VITA.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Cause I guess I don't have to click it on because I run one. And so, why pay the high fees?
And isn't there a big event that's going to happen
yep,
in January
and there will
in
be,
Little Rock?
There are two things on January 20th at the Southwest Recreation Center. In the evening, there will be a special outreach to Hispanic tax filers to educate folks about free tax filing. And on the first Saturday, I think in February, there will be the Saturday before the Super Bowl, there will be a big free tax filing event. I'm not sure the location, but be on the lookout. And that's a coalition of people who are sponsoring that.
Okay, we have 1 minute left. Final thoughts, state and federal taxes. Ellie, go.
I would say just stay tuned. Arkansas Advocates is following the Tax Reform and Low Relief Task Force. If you can't make it out to the actual meetings, you can check out our blog, and we will definitely keep you updated with everything that's happening there.
Follow the debate. It was said earlier, it's so critical, and folks often, because it's so confusing, don't do that. But follow it closely.
And Neil?
Just ditto on everything. I think we're actually we got educated by you, Ellie and Rebecca, about the task force, because these things are not out in the open, and so you've heard it, act on it, and make a difference.
Well, thank you for listening to Speak Up Arkansas. We'll be back next week, Wednesday at 5. Thank you all for listening.
You're listening to KEBF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
This is KABF in Little Rock, 88.3, the voice of the people in Central Arkansas. It's time for Radio Cows, a weekly program from the Central Arkansas Library System. Every Wednesday from 6 to 6:30 p.m. here on KABF 88.3 FM, we'll share with you conversations with interesting Arkansans on primary sources, chewing the fat with Rex and Paul, and much, much more. We invite you to let us know what else you want to hear by contacting us at radiocows@cows.org. This program is presented by the Butler Center for Arkansas Studies and the Cows Communications and Public Relations Department. For more information about Radio Cows, please visit the Butler Center's blog at butlercenter.org. Hello, and